Chapter 39. Falling up against it, we doubted. And when, also, the monk at the Church of San Sebastian showed us a paving stone with two great footprints in it, and said that Peter's feet made those, we lacked confidence again. Such things do not impress one. The monk said that angels came and liberated Peter from prison by night, and he started away from Rome by the Appian Way. The Savior met him and told him to go back, which he did. Peter left those footprints in the stone upon which he stood at the time. It was not stated how it was ever discovered whose footprints they were, seeing the interview occurred secretly and at night. The print of the face in the prison was that of a man of common size. The footprints were those of a man 10 or 12 feet high. The discrepancy confirmed our unbelief. We necessarily visited the Forum, where Caesar was assassinated, and also the Tarpeian Rock. We saw the dying gladiator at the Capitol, and I think that even we appreciated that wonder of art, as much, perhaps, as we did that fearful story wrought in marble, in the Vatican, the Laocoon. And then the Colosseum. Everybody knows the picture of the Colosseum. Everybody recognizes at once that hooped and windowed bandbox with a side bitten out. Being rather isolated, it shows to better advantage than any other of the monuments of ancient Rome. Even the beautiful Pantheon, whose pagan altars uphold the cross now, and whose Venus, tricked out in consecrated gimcracks, does reluctant duty as a Virgin Mary today, is built about with shabby houses and its stateliness sadly marred. But the monarch of all European ruins, the Colosseum, maintains that reserve and that royal seclusion which is proper to majesty. Weeds and flowers spring from its massy arches and its circling seats, and vines hang their fringes from its lofty walls. An impressive silence broods over the monstrous structure, where such multitudes of men and women were wont to assemble in other days. The butterflies have taken the places of the queens of fashion and beauty of 18 centuries ago, and the lizards sun themselves in the sacred seat of the emperor. More vividly than all the written histories, the Colosseum tells the story of Rome's grandeur and Rome's decay. It is the worthiest type of both that exists. Moving about the Rome of today, we might find it hard to believe in her old magnificence and her millions of population. But with this stubborn evidence before us, that she was obliged to have a theater with sitting room for 80,000 persons and standing room for 20,000 more, to accommodate such of her citizens as required amusement, we find belief less difficult. The Colosseum is over 1,600 feet long, 750 wide, and 165 high. Its shape is oval. In America we make convicts useful at the same time that we punish them for their crimes. We farm them out, and compel them to earn money for the state, by making barrels and building roads. Thus we combine business with retribution, and all things are lovely. But in ancient Rome they combined religious duty with pleasure. Since it was necessary that the new sect called Christians should be exterminated, the people judged it wise to make this work profitable to the state at the same time, and entertaining to the public. In addition to the gladiatorial combats and other shows, they sometimes threw members of the hated sect into the arena of the Colosseum, and turned wild beasts in upon them. It is estimated that 70,000 Christians suffered martyrdom in this place. This has made the Colosseum holy ground in the eyes of the followers of the Savior. And well it might, for if the chain that bound a saint and the footprints a saint has left upon a stone he chanced to stand upon be holy, surely the spot where a man gave up his life for his faith is holy. 17 or 18 centuries ago this Colosseum was the theater of Rome, and Rome was mistress of the world. Splendid pageants were exhibited here, in presence of the emperor, the great ministers of state, the nobles, and vast audiences of citizens of smaller consequence. Gladiators fought with gladiators, and at times with warrior prisoners from many a distant land. It was the theater of Rome, of the world, and the man of fashion who could not let fall in a casual and unintentional manner something about why private box at the Colosseum could not move in the first circles. When the clothing store merchant wished to consume the corner grocery man with envy, he bought secured seats in the front row and let the thing be known. When the irresistible dry goods clerk wished to blight and destroy, according to his native instinct, he got himself up regardless of expense, and took some other fellow's young lady to the Colosseum, and then accented the affront by cramming her with ice cream between the acts, or by approaching the cage and stirring up the martyrs with his whalebone cane for her edification. The Roman swell was in his true element only when he stood up against a pillar and fingered his mustache unconscious of the ladies, when he viewed the bloody combats through an opera glass 2 inches long, when he excited the envy of provincials by criticisms which showed that he had been to the Colosseum many and many a time and was long ago over the novelty of it, when he turned away with a yawn at last and said, "He a star. Handles his sword like an apprentice brigand. He'll do for the country, maybe, but he don't answer for the metropolis." Glad was the contraband that had a seat in the pit at the Saturday matinee, and happy the Roman street boy who ate his peanuts and guided the gladiators from the dizzy gallery. For me was reserved the high honor of discovering among the rubbish of the ruined Colosseum the only playbill of that establishment now extant. There was a suggestive smell of mint drops about it still, a corner of it had evidently been chewed, and on the margin, in choice Latin, these words were written in a delicate female hand. "Eat me on the Tarpeian Rock tomorrow evening, dear, at sharp 7. Mother will be absent on a visit to her friends, in the Sabine Hills. Claudia. Ah, where is that lucky youth today, and where the little hand that wrote those dainty lines? Dust and ashes these 1700 years." Thus reads the bill. Roman Colosseum. Unparalleled attraction. New properties. New lions. New gladiators. Engagement of the renowned Marcus Marcellus Valerian. For 6 nights only. The management beg leave to offer to the public an entertainment surpassing in magnificence anything that has heretofore been attempted on any stage. No expense has been spared to make the opening season one which'll be worthy the generous patronage which the management feel sure will crown their efforts. The management beg leave to state that they have succeeded in securing the services of a galaxy of talent, such as has not been beheld in Rome before. The performance will commence this evening with a grand broadsword combat between 2 young and promising amateurs and a celebrated Parthian gladiator who has just arrived a prisoner from the camp of Verus. This will be followed by a grand moral battle-axe engagement between the renowned Valerian with one hand tied behind him and 2 gigantic savages from Britain, after which the renowned Valerian, if he survive, will fight with the broadsword, left-handed, against 6 sophomores and a freshman from the gladiatorial college. A long series of brilliant engagements will follow, in which the finest talent of the empire will take part, after which the celebrated infant prodigy known as the young Achilles will engage 4 tiger whelps in combat, armed with no other weapon than his little spear. The whole to conclude with a chaste and elegant general slaughter, in which 13 African lions and 22 barbarian prisoners will war with each other until all are exterminated. Box office now open. Dress circle $1, children and servants half price. An efficient police force will be on hand to preserve order and keep the wild beasts from leaping the railings and discommoding the audience. Doors open at 7. Performance begins at 8. Positively no free list. Diodorus Job Press. It was as singular as it was gratifying that I was also so fortunate as to find among the rubbish of the arena a stained and mutilated copy of the Roman Daily Battle Axe, containing a critique upon this very performance. It comes to hand too late by many centuries to rank as news, and therefore I translate and publish it simply, to show how very little the general style and phraseology of dramatic criticism has altered in the ages that have dragged their slow length along since the carriers laid this one damp and fresh before their Roman patrons. The opening season. Colosseum. Notwithstanding the inclemency of the weather, quite a respectable number of the rank and fashion of the city assembled last night to witness the debut upon metropolitan boards of the young tragedian who has of late been winning such golden opinions in the amphitheaters of the provinces. Some 60,000 persons were present, and but for the fact that the streets were almost impassable, it is fair to presume that the house would have been full. His August Majesty, the Emperor Aurelius, occupied the imperial box, and was the cynosure of all eyes. Many illustrious nobles and generals of the empire graced the occasion with their presence, and not the least among them was the young patrician lieutenant whose laurels, won in the ranks of the thundering legion, are still so green upon his brow. The cheer which greeted his entrance was heard beyond the Tiber. He laid repairs and decorations add both to the comeliness and the comfort of the Colosseum. The new cushions are a great improvement upon the hard marble seats we have been so long accustomed to. The present management deserve well of the public. They have restored to the Colosseum the gilding, the rich upholstery and the uniform magnificence which old Colosseum frequenters tell us Rome was so proud of 50 years ago. The opening scene last night, the broadsword combat between two young amateurs and a famous Parthian gladiator who was sent here a prisoner, was very fine. The elder of the two young gentlemen handled his weapon with a grace that marked the possession of extraordinary talent. His feint of thrusting, followed instantly by a happily delivered blow which unhelmeted the Parthian, was received with hearty applause. He was not thoroughly up in the backhanded stroke, but it was very gratifying to his numerous friends to know that, in time, practice would have overcome this defect. However, he was killed. His sisters, who were present, expressed considerable regret. His mother left the Colosseum. The other youth maintained the contest with such spirit as to call forth enthusiastic bursts of applause. When at last he fell a corpse, his aged mother ran screaming, with hair disheveled and tears streaming from her eyes, and swooned away just as her hands were clutching at the railings of the arena. She was promptly removed by the police. Under the circumstances, the woman's conduct was pardonable, perhaps, but we suggest that such exhibitions interfere with the decorum which should be preserved during the performances, and are highly improper in the presence of the emperor. The Parthian prisoner fought bravely and well he might, for he was fighting for both life and liberty. His wife and children were there to nerve his arm with their love, and to remind him of the old home he should see again if he conquered. When his second assailant fell, the woman clasped her children to her breast and wept for joy. But it was only a transient happiness. The captive staggered toward her, and she saw that the liberty he had earned was earned too late. He was wounded unto death. Thus the first act closed in a manner which was entirely satisfactory. The manager was called before the curtain, and returned his thanks for the honor done him, in a speech which was replete with wit and humor, and closed by hoping that his humble efforts to afford cheerful and instructive entertainment would continue to meet with the approbation of the Roman public. The star now appeared, and was received with vociferous applause, and the simultaneous waving of 60,000 handkerchiefs. Marcus Marcellus Valerian, stage name, his real name is Smith, is a splendid specimen of physical development, and an artist of rare merit. His management of the battle axe is wonderful. His gaiety and his playfulness are irresistible in his comic parts, and yet they are inferior to his sublime conceptions in the grave realm of tragedy. When his axe was describing fiery circles about the heads of the bewildered barbarians, in exact time with his springing body and his prancing legs, the audience gave way to uncontrollable bursts of laughter. but when the back of his weapon broke the skull of one and almost in the same instant its edge clove the other's body in twain, the howl of enthusiastic applause that shook the building was the acknowledgement of a critical assemblage that he was a master of the noblest department of his profession. If he has a fault, and we are sorry to even intimate that he has, it is that of glancing at the audience, in the midst of the most exciting moments of the performance, as if seeking admiration. The pausing in a fight, to bow when bouquets are thrown to him is also in bad taste. In the great left-handed combat he appeared to be looking at the audience half the time, instead of carving his adversaries. And when he had slain all the sophomores, and was dallying with the freshmen, he stooped and snatched a bouquet as it fell, and offered it to his adversary at a time when a blow was descending which promised favorably to be his death warrant. Such levity is proper enough in the provinces, we make no doubt, but it ill suits the dignity of the metropolis. We trust our young friend will take these remarks in good part, for we mean them solely for his benefit. All who know us are aware that although we are at times justly severe upon tigers and martyrs, we never intentionally offend gladiators. He infant prodigy performed wonders. He overcame his four tiger whelps with ease, and with no other hurt than the loss of a portion of his scalp. The general slaughter was rendered with a faithfulness to details which reflects the highest credit upon the late participants in it. Upon the whole, last night's performances shed honor, not only upon the management, but upon the city that encourages and sustains such wholesome and instructive entertainments. We would simply suggest that the practice of vulgar young boys, in the gallery of shying peanuts and paper pellets at the tigers, and saying aye, and manifesting approbation or dissatisfaction by such observations as ully for the lion, oat, gladdy, oots, peach, ake a walk round the block, and so on, are extremely reprehensible when the emperor is present, and ought to be stopped by the police. Several times last night, when the supernumeraries entered the arena to drag out the bodies, the young ruffians in the gallery shouted, "Youp! Soup!" And also, "Oh, what a coat! And I don't you pat them shanks?" and made use of various other remarks expressive of derision. These things are very annoying to the audience. Matinee for the little folks is promised for this afternoon, on which occasion several martyrs will be eaten by the tigers. The regular performance will continue every night till further notice. Material change of program every evening. Benefit of Valerian, Tuesday, 29th, if he lives. I have been a dramatic critic myself, in my time, and I was often surprised to notice how much more I knew about Hamlet than Forrest did. And it gratifies me to observe now how much better my brethren of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.